Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, October the 14th, 2022, 15 minutes past the hour. And we're going to kick off the first hour of programming this morning with a real touchstone guest here on the program. He was supposed to be on with us yesterday, but we did have some technical difficulties with the telephone. So we are so glad he's able to join us today. He has been a dear friend of ours for many, many years now. He's come to Marion for events. He's been in the studio. He's done television shows with us. Just a nicer guy you could not ask for. And boy, with less than 30 days to go, just a few weeks until the election cycle, election day, will hit us here in Ohio. Nobody better to have on the program today, because we have got a Senate race that will be hotly contested. We have got a gubernatorial race that will be hotly contested. And of course, we in Marion are also interested very much in the treasurer's race here in Ohio, not only because of Mary Ellen Withrow's involvement as state treasurer, but because our own mayor, Scott Schertzer, is running for state treasurer. Who better to come on to talk about these important races than a man who knows people in all of them and held the office of governor here in Ohio, the 68th governor of the state of Ohio, Governor Ted Strickland. Governor, how are you?
Well, Scott, I am great, and how are you this morning?
Doing well. We're getting close to election day. Do you like this time of year?
I love this time of the year. I absolutely listen. This is my favorite time of the year. I like the crisp, cool mornings. I love the color of the leaves. It's just a wonderful time of the year.
Do you like this time of the year in politics when we start to see all the ads and the mailers and the yard signs?
Well, yeah, I like politics. I mean, obviously, I do, because I've spent a good deal of my life involved politically, and I've always felt that elections are just magnificent occurrences, because in our country, the people rule. The people have the power. The people have the ability to cast their votes, to decide who they want in public office, and that's a wonderful thing. So I don't mind all of the electioneering. I don't mind all the mailings that come in through the door. I don't even mind, the TV ads, because that's a part of our democratic system, and it's something we should celebrate.
You know, Governor Strickland, the race this year that is seemingly getting all the attention statewide and getting all the ads and so on and so forth is the Senate race. We've got Mr. Ryan and J.D. Vance, and this has become a very nasty campaign, ad-wise, so on and so forth. What have you made of the tenor of that race?
Well, Scott, the first thing I think we need to understand, that all television ads by politicians have two goals, only two goals. And one of those goals is not to educate and inform the voter. The two goals for a TV ad is to make your opponent look really bad and to make you look really good. And TV ads are constructed with one of those two goals in mind. And so I would hope that the voter would go beyond what they see on TV and really explore the two candidates, what they've done, what their positions are on important issues, and then make their decision based on that information rather than just simply being influenced by costly TV ads that are designed basically to distort the truth.
Now, I do have to say this before we get into the polls here. A lot of people are knocking the polls and have for quite a few years now since 2016. But if we go back, the polls have been fairly accurate in the last four or five cycles. So people can knock the polls, but here are the poll numbers. And this could be why that Senate race is so... the tenor is a little negative at this point. Right now, as of this morning, we have Tim Ryan with 45%, J.D. Vance 44.8% of the vote. It doesn't get any closer than that, Governor.
Yes, and it shouldn't be that close. I mean, and let me say up front, Scott, that Tim Ryan is one of my dear friends. I've known him for more than 20 years. He's an outstanding human being, a wonderful person, and he has been a great Congress member and will be a great senator, in my judgment. And we can talk about why I feel that way if you'd like. But on the other hand, I think J.D. Vance is a fraud, and I thought that long before he became a Senate candidate. I read his book, Hillbilly Elegy, and I was offended. As someone who grew up in Appalachia, Ohio, as someone who came from a background similar to the background that he says he came from, I was so offended by how he described the people that he grew up with, how condescending he was. And there's a portion in that book, Scott, where he talks about his mother, who was homeless, and he was a Yale School law graduate. He was bragging about, in the book, he brags about having a great home in Cincinnati, a new wife, two dogs, a great job. He says in his book, I had it made, but I didn't want my mother to be homeless. So he put her up in a motel that he called in his book a sleazy motel. He said his mother had an addiction problem. But when he describes that motel, he said there was a trucker out in the parking lot with his arm hanging out the door with a hypodermic needle in it. And then he describes that sleazy motel that he put his mother in and said it cost him $150 a week. And after reading that, I thought, for God's sake, couldn't he have found a Holiday Inn Express instead of putting his mother in a sleazy motel? Now, I share that with your listeners because it's in his book. I'm not exaggerating. He actually wrote that in his book.
Boy, oh boy.
And so that was long before he became a Senate candidate. But in my mind, I don't know what his relationship was with his mother at the time. He says it's very good now. But anyone with the financial means to do otherwise, who would put your mother in a hotel that costs $150 a week, I don't want that person in the United States Senate representing Ohio.
Well,
so that's just one of the things that bothers me about J.D. Vance.
You know, Governor, the common wisdom would be, I think, these three things as to why he's doing so well. Number one, this is Senator Portman's seat, so people would consider it a Republican seat for quite a while. Number two, he has been endorsed by President Trump, and in the primary, he was running third place in that Republican primary until President Trump came to Delaware, endorsed him, then he took home the Republican nomination. And number three, Donald Trump Jr. has been here going around the state with him, helping him campaign. And you know what? When he showed up in Marion, I'm not going to say who was in the pictures, but for everything bad you just said about J.D. Vance, there were people getting pictures of him with Donald Trump Jr. It was a big day when the two of them came to Marion, J.D. Vance and Donald Trump Jr. So I think that's why he's polling very well.
Yes, and you're absolutely correct. Had it not been for Donald Trump's endorsement, J.D. Vance would probably have come in third in that Republican primary. Even the Republicans were going to vote for someone else if Donald Trump had not intervened near the last minute, shortly before that primary vote occurred, and J.D. Vance was able to squeeze out a primary victory. And you're absolutely correct. Donald Trump is responsible for J.D. Vance being the Republican nominee. I think there were better Republicans in that primary that would have done a better job of representing Ohio in the U.S. Senate than J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance has spent a good deal of his life in San Francisco. He has been quoted as saying that he really loves to drink wine and eat cheese in the California countryside. He has said that he doesn't feel comfortable in Ohio. Well, no wonder. There have been huge numbers of years of his life where he hasn't even lived in Ohio or been an Ohioan. So, anyway, I'm going to stop cracking on J.D. Vance. I've said what I feel about him, but we can talk about the differences, if you would like, between J.D. Vance's position on the issues and Tim Ryan's position on the issues. I think that's how people should make their decision as to whether they're going to vote for Ryan or Vance.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go on to the differences between these two candidates.
Well, let's take the matter of a woman's right to make a choice about whether or not she's going to carry a pregnancy to term. And there are vast differences between Ryan and Vance on that issue. Tim Ryan believes that a woman and her doctor should be making the decision regarding her own reproductive health and whether or not she chooses for her own personal reasons, some medical obviously, to have an abortion. J.D. Vance believes that a 10-year-old child that's been raped should be required to give birth to that rapist baby. And when he was talking about this to the press, he said, two wrongs don't make a right. And I think most Ohioans, regardless of whether they're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, would find it unreasonable that a child, the victim of a rape, the government should require that child to give birth to that rapist baby. That's a big difference between Vance and Ryan. And I think it's one that people need to know about.
Why is Tim Ryan, in your estimation, the best person for this job?
Because Tim Ryan has spent his life working for working people. Tim Ryan is obviously endorsed by organized labor because he believes in labor. He believes that people have a right to join and be represented by a union. He believes that working people need to be, as he says, cut in on the deal. That America's and Ohio's middle class is what a politician should support, because the middle class in this country is the productive part part of our economy that helps our economy grow and expand and provides opportunity for more and more people. Jim Ryan has fought against China and China's being given the most favored nation trade status. Tim voted against giving China that most favored nation trade status. Jim Ryan voted against NAFTA. Jim Ryan has consistently fought throughout his political career for fair trade, and he works to protect the American worker. Tim Ryan believes that citizens have a right to have adequate health care, that it was affordable. Tim Ryan is the one who voted to put a cap on the cost of insulin. There are a lot of people in Ohio who have diabetes and have to take insulin to stay alive. And the pharmaceutical companies were jacking up the price of insulin that would make it almost impossible for a person who needs insulin to be able to afford it. Tim Ryan voted to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month. Those are really important things that affect the lives of everyday people. And J.D. Vance has not taken those positions on any of these issues.
Now, Governor, that all being said, and I know you can give a fair, clear... we know you're for Tim Ryan, but I know you can give a fair, clear estimation. With the polls as close as they are, and as close as we are to Election Day, on Election Night, who's going to pull that off?
I don't know. That's the honest answer.
That's a tough...
I don't know who's going to win. It is very close. Ohio is... Ohio's an interesting state, Scott. Ohio is a state where neither party... where no particular political person can take the voter for granted. As we know, the history of Ohio is that Ohio can vote for a Democrat or a Republican, depending upon that person and that person's position on the issues and the circumstances that exist at the time of the vote. So I don't know who's going to win. I hope Tim Ryan wins. I think he is by far the superior candidate. But I'll also say this, Scott. Unlike some of my Republican friends, I'm going to accept the results of the vote. If J.D. Vance gets more votes than Tim Ryan, I'm going to say J.D. Vance won. Because I believe it's important in this country for citizens to accept the results of a fair and a free election. And if we ever get away from accepting the results of an election, then we're in real trouble. We become like a lot of other countries on the face of this earth that is just undemocratic, ruled by despots, and we must have confidence in our elections. And even if the candidate that we oppose wins the election, we should accept that result.
And we should also let the listeners know, one of the reasons this is getting a lot of attention, much like the Senate race with Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania and Herschel Walker down in Georgia and Stephanie Abrams, or the governor's race down there, one of the reasons these races are getting a lot of attention is because the Senate, the United States Senate, is in play right now, Democrats and Republicans. But we'll talk more about that in the end, because I want to move on to the next race here, something the governor knows something about, because it's the governor's race. This is a bleak situation for the Democrats, poll-wise. Now, let me just tell you what the polls are. I've never seen polls like this. I've been covering politics in Ohio for a long time, and I've never seen a gubernatorial race poll-wise like this. Since August of 2022, Mike DeWine has not been below 50% poll-wise. He's polling at this moment 52.7%. Nan Whaley, the Democrat, has never polled above 40% since August, currently polling at 36%. That is as low as a Democratic candidate for governor has polled in I don't know how many years. I've never seen polls like that. What do you make of that, Governor?
Well, what I make of that is that Mike DeWine has been around forever. He has the name recognition that's almost 100% across the state. He has personal wealth as well as a lot of other resources. And you know, you mentioned that he's polling, and you would think that he would be very comfortable without any fear of losing this election. But why hasn't Mike DeWine just been willing to debate Nan Whaley? I mean, why is he not willing to debate the first Democratic woman candidate for governor? Debated other candidates in the past. What's he afraid of? And I think he's afraid that Nan Whaley will effectively point out in his presence that he has been dishonest with the people of Ohio when he went to Dayton after that mass shooting and promised that he would do something. Well, he's done something all right. He has agreed to let teachers carry guns in classrooms. It's so unreasonable, the decision that this legislature has made, and the governor has been willing to go along when it comes to public safety and the safety of our school kids. He has not been a strong leader. Let me back up, Scott. I'm not someone who is down on Mike DeWine in a personal way. I talk to Mike DeWine. I think he's a decent human being. Okay, but I think he has allowed this legislature to jerk him around so that Ohio is being controlled primarily not by the governor, but by some of these legislative leaders, and he refuses to stand up to them. Mike DeWine knows better, but he goes along because he's afraid of offending these MAGA leaders in the legislature. And so the polls indicate that he's likely to win this election. I hope he doesn't. I'm supporting Nan Whaley. I think she's got all the qualifications to be a really good governor. My wife has been working for Nan's election, not for pay, obviously, but volunteering to help Nan full-time for a few months now. And she's fighting a good fight, and the polls indicate that she won't be successful. But I'm not willing to give up until the votes have been counted. And if Mike DeWine gets more votes than Nan Whaley, I'm going to say Mike DeWine was duly elected for a second term, and I'll accept that. I'm getting back, as you understand here, to a concern that I have, a concern that growing numbers of people in this country are just indicating that they're going to be unwilling to accept the outcome of an election if their preferred candidate doesn't win. And that's dangerous. That's dangerous to our democracy. So I'm going to accept the results of the votes after those votes have been cast and counted, and then we just move on. And I would hope that most of the rest of the citizens in this country would feel the same way.
Want to talk about a few more things in this gubernatorial race here in Ohio. You brought up the fact that there will be no gubernatorial debates. Mike DeWine has refused to do that. For whatever reason, and you gave your thoughts on why you think he doesn't want to do that, you know the man, as you've said. You gave him a lot of praise during the pandemic. What do you make of him as a human being not willing to debate? What kind of taste does that leave in your mouth about the man, Mike DeWine?
It's a puzzle to me. It is really a puzzle to me. I think it's very disrespectful for two reasons. First of all, people deserve to have the candidates stand, face each other, and debate the differences in their positions. I just think that's respectful to the voting public. But secondly, I think it is very disrespectful because Nan Whaley happens to be a woman, and she is, I believe, the first woman to be a gubernatorial candidate for the Democratic Party. And I think it's disrespectful to her. What's he afraid of? I mean, does he think he's going to lose the election as a result of a debate with Nan Whaley? Maybe he does.
Well, this brings up a point, and again, people can knock the polls if they would like, but in any gubernatorial race, we can go back to the races of that Kasich won, the races that you won, the race that DeWine became governor, beating Rich Cordray. We have to believe that in Ohio, there are more than 40% of the people who are polled and vote who are Democrat. Nan Whaley has never polled above 40%. Now, if 50% of the voter electorate in Ohio is Republican, well, then Mike DeWine getting 50, 52%, that makes sense. But why is Nan Whaley running for the highest office in the state not even able to break 40%? Not one time since August. We know what Tim Ryan's polling. He's polling in the 40s. He's polling ahead of J.D. Vance at this point. What is going on here in this race that she is getting, not even getting all of the Democrats?
Well, Scott, Ohio is a big, complex state. Ohio is a microcosm, in my judgment, of the larger country. We've got everything in Ohio. And one of the things we have in Ohio that makes it very difficult to run statewide is that we've got multiple media markets, costly media markets. You know them. Columbus, Cleveland, Toledo, Akron, Youngstown. I mean, on and on and on. And it takes a lot of money to get known in Ohio, just to get people familiar with your name. Nan Whaley has been the mayor of a fairly modest-sized city, Dayton. So a lot of people in Ohio, because she hasn't had the resources, they don't really have an opportunity to know her or to know what she stands for. And that makes it very difficult. And then you combine that with the fact that Mike DeWine's been around forever. I mean, he's been a legislator. He's been an attorney general. He's been a senator. Now he's a governor. So he starts out with everybody knowing Mike DeWine, knowing his name, obviously. And Nan Whaley started out not very well known. And there are still large numbers of people in Ohio who do not know her. They don't know her name. And that's because she hasn't had the multi-millions of dollars that it takes to get well-known in Ohio. You might be known in Dayton, but people in Cleveland may not have much of an idea about you. And I think that's been Nan's biggest problem. She just hasn't been able to garner the resources necessary to be known throughout this great state of ours.
You know, Governor, here's the puzzler about this race to a lot of people, and I've heard this from so many people. Mike DeWine was the first sitting governor in Ohio, I believe in more than 100 years, or pretty close to it, to be primaried this year. And he was primaried by two strong opponents, Jim Renacci and Joe Blystone, and they ended up being strong opponents in that primary. Mike DeWine in the Republican primary, this was, 6 months ago, back in May, he couldn't even get 50% of the Republican vote in the Republican primary. But in the main election, he gets over 50%. And he has been, you talked about the legislature, the Republicans were very unhappy with how he handled the pandemic, which is why he was primaried. The legislature took away his powers, by all accounts. I don't know if we know the real story, but pretty much forced him to get rid of Dr. Acton, who was a big deal in the beginning of this. So the Republicans were not happy with Mike DeWine. They were not happy with him. But yet, and people thought, boy, the Democrats really got a shot at this one. And yet, this has turned into almost a blowout race. Now, will it be that way on election night? I don't know. But boy, we are awful close for a nearly 20% variant in the polls here. I mean, that is not in the margin of error. With Mike DeWine being so unpopular in his own party, why is he polling more in the main against a Democrat than he did in his own primary?
Scott, I think there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, you were correct. When this virus first hit us, Mike DeWine showed leadership, and he did some really good things to protect the health of Ohioans. And consequently, a lot of Republicans came to dislike him because of that, and a lot of Democrats came to see him as a reasonable person that you know, was doing the right thing for the people. That was early on, and so I think he kind of fixed himself in the minds of a lot of independents and Democrats as a reasonable leader. Sadly, you're right. After that initial demonstration of real leadership, Governor DeWine caved in, and Dr. Acton left, and the conservative Republicans, anti-vaxxers, and so on in the legislature became dominant, and I don't think Mike DeWine really fought back the way he should have. He showed weakness. So I think his initial handling of the virus has been helpful to him in the minds of a lot of people. I also think if there had been a third party candidate, and there was an effort on the part of a minister, I believe, to get on the ballot as an independent and was unable to do so, I think if there was a third party running as an independent that would give these disgruntled Republicans, who many of them really don't like Governor DeWine, if they had an option that was not a Democratic option, I think Mike DeWine could very well have lost. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Republican Party worked so hard to make sure there wasn't an independent candidate in this race for governor. If so, I think he very well could have lost. But the issue now is it's a binary choice between Nan Whaley and Mike DeWine, and a lot of people don't really know Nan Whaley like they should. I think if Nan was better known, was able to really have the resources necessary to campaign across this state of ours, things would be very different. But I'm not giving up. I still think, it's not over until it's over. It's not over until the people have voted.
And one thing we should say about polls and interviews like this, if you haven't voted, vote the way you want. Don't vote because the polls are the way they are or anything for either candidate. You need to vote who you want to vote for. That's the right of this country. But I even hate to ask this question. This is your party. This is the Democratic Party. This is an office you held as a very popular governor and only losing the gubernatorialship by a very slim margin to Kasich. But is the reason Nan Whaley, money, yes, notability, notoriety, could be, is the reason she's never polled above 40% when even Fitzpatrick a few years ago, I think, polled above 40%. He didn't have a whole lot of name recognition. Is it because she's the first woman who ever has held the candidacy for governor in Ohio as a candidate for one of the two major parties? Does this have anything to do with it?
Oh, Scott, I hope that's not the case. I really hope that that's not the case. But I have some concern that there may be some people who aren't willing to vote for a woman to be the governor. I hope that's not the case, but I think you may be onto something there.
Want to ask you this, and we've got 10 minutes left, and there's another race I want to get to. Boy, time goes fast when you're on. I love having you on. This gubernatorial race, and again, I know you'll give me a fair answer here, and again, anything can happen in the next few days, but when we're talking 36% to 52.7 for DeWine, barring some major disaster by the DeWine campaign, who's going to win this race?
Well, it looks as if Governor DeWine's in a strong position to win, but when you throw out those poll numbers, Scott, doesn't that indicate that there's a pretty sizable undecided number of people?
I think about 10%, I think it would be in that neighborhood.
Well, if Nan's in the high 30s and he's only at 52, then there's a sizable number. I mean, why would anybody be undecided now in this race? I mean, you would think, would you not think that Mike DeWine would be well above 52%? I mean, he's the incumbent governor, and he's running against a candidate that's not terribly well known. Why isn't he at 54% or at 56%?
You know, it's interesting, Governor, because we've had Jim Renacci and Joe Blystone both on since that primary that they lost to Governor DeWine. And by the way, it's 12% would be undecided. So even if Nan Whaley got all 12% at this point, she would still only have 48% of the vote and lose by 4% to Mike DeWine. But that being said, I think the reason is what we spoke about earlier. Why are 12% of the voters undecided? I would imagine those are the people like Jim Renacci who came on this show who said, I am not a fan of Mike DeWine. I ran against Mike DeWine. I don't want him to be governor, but Nan Whaley is too radical of a Democrat for me, so I have to vote for Mike DeWine. Don't want to, but...
Or some of those folks just may not vote in that race. But this is what I think, and I'm trying to be upfront with you here. I don't think Mike DeWine is likely to get many votes from that currently undecided group of voters. I just don't. They already know him. What's he going to do between now and the next 30 days to convince those people who already know him to be willing to vote for him? I think Nan's going to get a huge chunk of that undecided vote. I say that based upon my experiences as a candidate and as I've watched other races. When someone has 100% name recognition and is at 52%, what are they going to do within the next few days to convince those undecideds that, I mean, the undecideds know Mike DeWine, obviously. He's well known. What's going to convince them to vote for him when they aren't willing to say they're going to vote for him now? I think a lot of those votes are going to go to Nan Whaley.
Want to talk about one more race in the remaining 6 minutes we have here, because it's very important to us here in Marion, with the lineage in this office of Mary Ellen Withrow holding the state treasurer's office. Our mayor is running for state treasurer, Scott Schertzer, somebody you know very well.
Sure.
Now, this is an interesting race. He's running against incumbent Mr. Sprague, the state treasurer at this point. One of the problems people see with this is if you look at the races in Ohio in the last, getting pretty close to 10 years now, because of name recognition, something you just said Nan Whaley has a problem with, and money, something Nan Whaley has a problem with, that when we have a gubernatorial race, we don't poll a whole lot in these treasurer races because they're smaller races, but they are statewide. But the problem becomes the party, in that whatever the gubernatorial candidate polls in that party, usually the candidate in these other races polls about the same, more or less, 2% up or down, usually in these other races. Being that Mike DeWine's at 52% and Nan Whaley's at 36%, and there hasn't been a whole lot of buzz about the treasurer's race statewide because of the Senate race and because of the gubernatorial race. We like Scott Schertzer, obviously, here in Marion. You like Scott Schertzer. But what do you think of this treasurer's race?
Well, I think you're right that that oftentimes the so-called top of the ticket is going to have an effect upon how these down races turn out. But there are a lot of people in Ohio who even now, according to the polls, are going to be voting for Tim Ryan. So this is an unusual year, I think, and I think that may make it a little more difficult to predict some of these down so-called down ticket races. But I think the results in Ohio are going to demonstrate the power of the abortion issue in Ohio. Scott, women have been registering at a much higher rate than men over the last 2 to 3 months in Ohio. I think there are new voters that are going to be coming to the polls to vote in this upcoming election that perhaps have never even voted in past elections. So I think things are still a little unsettled and a little volatile, and I just encourage, you know, people to ask themselves, what kind of Ohio do we want going forward? Do we want our personal freedoms further limited? Do we want, these people that I consider pretty radical in the state legislature to further impinge upon our freedoms as Ohioans? To determine what kind of books are in our school libraries, to determine whether or not a woman can be forced to carry a pregnancy to term if they've been raped. Some of these folks don't even want exceptions for the life of the mother. They're just absolutely radical. And I think that issue is a sleeper issue in Ohio and across the country. And I think we may see women come out to vote in numbers that we haven't seen before, and that may not be adequately measured in the polling that's taking place.
You know, Governor, that's an interesting point, because a lot of people feel that that may be an unmeasurable number that we have not seen yet. In this treasurer's race, though, with Scott Schertzer and Mr. Sprague, the state treasurer, because of the way the top of the ticket is in Ohio right now with Nan Whaley and Mike DeWine, who do you see at this point pulling that one out?
It's impossible to know. You're talking about the treasurer's race?
Yeah. I mean, it is hard to know because we don't have polls in that race.
It's very hard to know because we don't have polling in those races. So it's impossible to speak with any degree of accuracy or reasonable predictability when it comes to all of those, you know, the treasurer, the auditor, the attorney general, and so on and so forth. It's really impossible to know for sure how they're going to turn out.
Let me ask you this in the minute we have left here. Can we say at this point, because of the polling in the gubernatorial race, because these what we call down-ticket races have not gotten a lot of attention, because there is no polling, and because of the way Ohio has voted, I don't believe there is a state office holder besides Sherrod Brown, who's a Democrat in Ohio at this point. Is it an uphill battle for the Democrats like Scott Schertzer in those races against incumbents?
It's always an uphill battle for Democrats in Ohio. I think Ohio probably could be accurately described as a center-right state in most elections. Ohio's not a radical state. Ohio is a state that's fairly evenly divided politically. But I think in most cases, the Republican candidate may start out with a slight advantage in statewide races. But you're right. We have Sherrod Brown who wins comfortably because Sherrod has been around. He has name recognition. He has the resources needed to mount a strong, battle for his seat and so on and so forth. So, an election is coming up. As I said at the beginning of this interview, elections, in my judgment, are magnificent events because that's when the people have the power. The politicians can talk and make promises and make accusations and spend money on TV ads and all of that kind of stuff. But ultimately, when it all comes down to it, it's the vote of the people that makes the outcome helps us reach the outcome. And so I'm excited about the upcoming election. I'm going to vote. I hope most of your listeners have decided that they're going to vote. Early voting's already started here in Ohio. And this is something we should do as a part of our civic responsibilities, to cast our vote, to make our voices heard, and then to accept the results once the people have spoken.
Governor, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and hopefully we'll get to speak again before the election. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott, and I hope your visitors or your listeners have a great day.
It's Thank
you. Beautiful fall day here in Ohio.
Absolutely. Stay well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The 68th governor of the state of Ohio, Governor Ted Strickland. We'll be back in 15 minutes.
Nobody has more protesters than me. And wait till the riots. You're going to see fantastic riots in Cleveland. These are going to be the best riots you've ever seen. I inspire amazing riots. And these are going to be top-notch riots.
Well, I tell you what, Donald, I know it's such a busy time for you. I can't thank you enough. I know you dislike the...